The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Why don't we go ahead and get started? It's a couple minutes after 10. I appreciate you all coming out on Friday and taking time from whatever else you might be doing. I imagine I've met most of you either via email, if not in person by now. If I haven't, I'm David Jaffe. I've been your Dean of Students, and I say almost in the past tense because you're on the eve of commencement, as I consider it. So congratulations for that. Get started. Couple of hurdles that are remaining. We hope one of them is not getting to commencement and through commencement. That should be the easy part. As a parenthetical more than anything, because one of your classmates wrote this morning to say, oh, word of mouth is the only way we're figuring out what to do. We have so many things to do to graduate and this and that. There's not so much to do. You need to earn all your credits. You need to fulfill your formal graduation requirements. You do need to file a notice of intent to graduate with the registrar, which I assume most of you have done. The SBA and our office are working on a graduation week, which I think we're going to set up for early next month, where we'll have several days in the lobby of a bunch of things, most of which are more informal, photos and things like that, and graduation committee information and whatnot, you know, about some of the more social things that will be taking place. But you can look at that down the road. Our goal today, though, for those of you who are here and those who pick up on the podcast, is to talk about the bar exam. For those of you who have been attending sessions while you've been at school, we touched on this ever so briefly and lightly as 1L students in the academic advising period. We just kind of talked a little bit about, really very little bit about what you needed to worry about, which was pretty much nothing as a 1L student because you were going to be taking all of these required courses and not have much of a choice with anything else. We shared at that time that beyond the required courses, the only other course that we really emphasize students to take is evidence, because unless you sit for the Louisiana or Washington State Bar, evidence is going to appear on the multi-state, and so we shared that then. And then during the your 2L period, we did a series of sessions also on kind of structure of the bar, breaking down the bar day one, day two, day three for those jurisdictions that have a third day, kind of explaining the MBE, the MEE, the MPRE, the MPT, whichever ones I might be missing, but basically breaking down what you'd be looking at. We have those on podcast. They should be on the Student Affairs website by this afternoon for those of you who want to look at it. Our plan is not to focus so much today on breaking down the bar. For those of you who want that information, if we have time afterwards, we can talk about it at the back end. But this is really more about just getting you, of all things, psyched up for the exam. It's not a rah-rah type thing, but it is a type of thing that we want you to take once and only once. We want you to pass it and be done with it. My belief in meeting with students, counseling students both individually and doing sessions like these for the last 15 years now, is that the majority of students who do not pass the bar the first time out find that it has nothing to do with academics. If you've gotten through law school, you know what you need to do to pass the bar. You've learned most of the subject areas. For those that you haven't, you're likely going to be signing up for a bar prep company that's charging you a lot of money to prep you in those subject areas. I'll spend a minute just on the academics. There are some studies that have been out there that suggest there is some corroboration between lower GPA scores and passage on the bar the first time out. Now, it's not to put anybody off. Students in the bottom 10% of the class will pass, and students in the top 10% of the class will fail. The basic, what we're able to piece together is that the further away you are from that elusive 4.0, if you will, in school, the more it means that over a 14-week period, you might have had slightly more of a challenge in grasping some of the materials. And all that means is that your classmates, perhaps now graduates who are sitting alongside you for the bar, if they happen to have done better academically, it means they probably had a quicker grasp of the materials, which means they may be focusing ever so lightly on some of the subject areas that you're learning, one, maybe for the first time if you didn't take the course in law school, and two, that you might need a little bit more time to focus on than the half day or several hours that a bar prep company is giving you. So the first kind of shot across the bow, and each of you needs to decide this for yourself, where you were academically, but, you know, not about, oh, my God, I had a 3.2, so that means that, you know, 60% of the class was above me, or whatever the numbers are. Not about where we were with respect to the class, but where your own sense was of how you were grasping materials. And the more you felt you had a concern about that grasp, I don't want you to raise any anxiety. I just want you to say to yourself, I need to recognize that the courses I did not take in law school that may appear on the bar, we can talk about may versus will. The MBE subjects are going to appear. The essays, each jurisdiction lists what might appear. That's the universe, and then you have to get a, you know, you're not going to know until you sit down or the bar prep company gives you a sense of, you know, corporations has appeared every year for the past 10 years, so it's likely to appear, things like that. You need to start thinking for yourself, how much strength and how much time and emphasis do I need to put into the bar courses generally, and then specifically into those subject areas that I might be more concerned about. Again, it's not a psych out, but it's a psych in. My belief is that the physical and mental preparation for the bar from here on out, primarily come graduation and the start of the bar prep, but really from here on out, is what's going to either doom you or pass you. Okay? Across the board, and this is a very general number, but across the board, the numbers for first-time bar takers across the country has been somewhere between 75, 77, 78%. Okay? That means that we got 100 students in this room. Obviously, we have less, but it means 1 in 4 are not set up to pass the bar across the country. I don't want that to be this group of students. I don't want that to be this graduating class. And so our goal is to spend a little bit of time this morning, an hour or so, primarily with the panelists, a little bit with me, kind of by their side, talking about a lot of the physical and mental preparation. I've learned from experience over the years that students do a far better job listening to their peers than they do to administrators. I've come to accept that. We still have a role to play. You know, I know probably for most of you, it seems like if I took the bar, it had to have been before you were born, and I actually realized that it's actually getting close to that point in time. All of you were at least born at the time that I took it. But I did take the bar. I did take it in Maryland. I still keep my application from 18 years ago in my desk drawer because it now has the most comprehensive history of what I had done up to that point in time. And we can talk a little bit about the applications. And you can hear the panelists kind of nodding in agreement to some degree. There are a lot of components that need to come together. So what I want to start with, and you saw the title of your white, can fail the bar exam and how to avoid it. What I have here, what I put up here, what I'd like to start with, what I call soft rationales. Every one of us, regardless of how we're hardwired, has the ability, and typically will, when we have an issue or challenge that's facing us, is looking for some reason to say, I think the train going up the hill, I know I can do this, being positive. But somewhere in the back of our mind, we find some excuse, either consciously or subconsciously, that says, if I don't do this well, this will be the reason for it. I call it a soft landing or a soft rationale. There are tons that you can make up. I threw a couple of them on the board that I've heard and seen over the years. My handwriting's not great, that's why, one of the reasons I don't teach. Here you go. Law school taught me everything I need to know. Why prepare for the exam? Or, of course, the opposite. Law school taught me nothing, so I can't pass the exam. I haven't done well academically, so I kind of expect to fail. Wonderful soft landing to psych yourself out. I never do well on standardized tests, so I can't pass the MBE portion, which means I'm never going to pass. I don't do well on time tests to begin with. One of the concerns I've had here at this school, and I've raised with a number of my colleagues of your faculty, is that beyond the first year, and I think most of you will probably agree with this, you start seeing fewer and fewer in-class exams. Professors, and we get this, professors are not teaching you to get ready for the bar exam. They're teaching you for preparation in life and the practice and whatnot. And I get that, and we don't have major disagreements. But the challenge is the bar exam is timed. And if you haven't taken a time test in a while, and for some of you it might have been since first year, that could be a real rude awakening. I'm getting married, my sister's getting married, my brother, my daughter, some relative's getting married, I have to help prepare for it. If you're planning on getting married this summer and you're planning on taking the bar, stop the plans for the wedding, okay? At least say aye. Of course I can't change that, but I mean that a little bit more than tongue in cheek. The goal, among other things, is to clear the decks, okay? Don't have as an excuse at the end of the day, I needed to do something else during that time period. Okay, and again, the panelists will share with you shortly their own views about how they prepped, what their balance was, their time management, things like that. The individuals who are here have not been prepped by me in terms of what to say to the students at all. In fact, the only reason that these three were selected is that they all helped create a super PAC that actually is giving to my re-election campaign. And so this was my thank you. No, they all passed the most recent bar exam, and that's why they're here. But they will give you their own sense of what that summer was like. My view is clear the decks. Don't have an excuse that you needed to do something else. And you see that woven through some of these. I hear there are like 1,000 people that are in the Civic Center or the the auditorium with me, that is going to freak me out. There's no way I can handle that. And so, you know, I'm going to be psyched out, even if I'm prepared for it once I walk in. I have to work to pay for the exam, so I'm going to have a little bit of time to study. I'm taking a break after finally graduating. Take a break. Schedule your break for the Wednesday or the Thursday following the bar exam, okay? Not for the week after graduation, if you can avoid it. Not for, you know, I'll take it easy until July 4th or I'll start on July 5th because I still have a couple of weeks. Again, my first, and really if I'm going to underscore anything, is have plans. Make this the final hurdle. It means speaking to significant others who say, I just saw your graduation, I expect you graduated, and so now it's time to reconnect and everything else. It's not quite going to be like that. I would say, if I were advising or counseling, that it's going to be more like the conversations we had with your significant others, parents, whomever, at orientation, which was there's going to be a transition. And you're not going to be hearing from the student who you've been clinging to for all these years, including through college, and been able to see and everything else, because I've got to get through another 2 months. And I promise you, come July 26th, 7th, 8th, wherever it is, I will be free from it. At least for the period of time the rest of the summer, we can talk about work and everything else at another time. But you want to get through that bar exam, okay? I have two somewhat, I would say, not radical, but different kind of props that I'd like to bring to these sessions. And I'm going to kind of talk about them for just a couple minutes, and then I'm going to sit down and really let the panelists talk. The day of the exam, there are two potential, there are many potential distractions, but two that I think can be chief among them. And one of them kind of leads me to a question, which is how many of you know for a fact that you will not be handwriting on your exam? Know that you'll be using a computer for a fact. Okay. How many of you are looking at me like, well, I'm not sure I had a choice, or I don't know what I'm going to be doing? Okay. And how many of you know that you're going to be handwriting? Okay, so it's kind of a mix. What you're going to find, at least the three jurisdictions can help, kind of the three individuals here from the three jurisdictions can tell you about what they know about New York, Maryland, Virginia. What you're going to find is that it is not a lockdown that you're going to be taking the bar exam on computer. Most of the jurisdictions have at least a pilot program. A number of them have moved past the pilot program and have a process by which a number of bar exam takers may take it on laptop. It's typically by a lottery because they have to kind of split. They haven't made it for 100% of the bar takers. The reason I raise this at this time is that the majority of you have not handwritten for years. Okay? Right? I mean, it's just true. Probably not since before college, I'm guessing. And the reason that I raise that is that if you have not handwritten, consider for a moment the fact that you're going to be doing essays. I mean, MBE, the multi-state portion, okay, you're going to be filling in bubbles, maybe writing some notes, but basically filling in bubbles, you can probably hack that. But writing essays in a time period when the anxiety is cranked up and you're trying to spit out, regurgitate everything you can, and all of a sudden that hand starts to cramp. One of the worst downers you could possibly have. And if you've ever had a toe cramp or a hand cramp or whatever, you can't simply stop and have it go away. You know that toe cramp where you try to move your toe and it won't stop? If you get that hand cramp, you don't get to raise your hand and say, can I have a timeout? And so, again, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, and I will tell you, and at the end of the session, we will give you the first prop we have available, okay? Stress balls. I'm not kidding. Can you catch them?
No.
Okay. I got a box of stress balls. We're not going to call them stress balls. We're going to call them bar exam balls. Take them with you. Unless you know 100% that you are going to be typing on the exam, I would suggest, and I don't care how silly it looks, it really shouldn't. People should have these anyway. Take these with you wherever you are, when you're watching TV, when you don't need them, whatnot. And I would suggest, with your writing hand, you start strengthening those muscles, okay? It's a throwaway idea. It's easy as possible. I guarantee you, if you end up handwriting on the exam and you've got these muscles ready, you're going to be better shape than some of your colleagues who are taking that bar exam. And just as a side, the brown ones smell like coca, so if you like that, they're at the bottom of the box, all right? That's number one.
Can I just add something
on
that?
Yeah.
I don't see it on here necessarily, but something else that might factor into your decision is there's an extra fee, at least in Virginia, of $150 extra dollars just to take it on the computer.
Yeah, Maryland too.
The reference here, and we'll have these at the end. We have some forms here, not forms really, but it's bar exam information. It's not for every jurisdiction in the country, but for a good number of them, of which a majority of our graduates sit for the bar. If you've not looked at the application process yet, this will give you a sense of the exam dates, the filing fees,
The filing deadlines, whether required, whether it has the MPT on it, the MPRE, and then some additional notes. And these have been put together by Myra Wilder, my colleague in Student Affairs, Assistant Director, who I will also say, she's hosting the session tomorrow, is also the law school's bar exam guru. So if following the session you have individual questions about the bar, absolutely make an appointment or drop in to see her. She'd be happy to speak to you. Some of you are grumbling about the fact that the early deadline for the Maryland bar passed on Tuesday. It does. And it did. It doesn't mean you missed anything. It means you're going to pay a little bit more if you're planning on filing for the Maryland bar. We don't provide the deadlines for 50 jurisdictions simply because it's a moving target every year. If we were going to do it and do it well, we would have had to tell you your first year of law school that the Florida bar filing fee starts to increase 90 days after you start law school, 2.5 years ago. Okay? And then every jurisdiction we'd have to be tracking each year to follow it. So the information is there. We'll provide it to you. Second question, mental and physical preparation. How many of you are honestly willing to acknowledge that during a ramped up anxiety period, you have the potential for being distracted by outside noises, by outside effects, by people who are doing things around you in a relatively closed environment? Possibly? Show of hands, maybe? Okay. We're going to talk in a couple of minutes about the sights and sound of the bar exam. I'm going to suggest to you my other prop, and I don't know if any of the folks on the panel used it, and I don't have these for everybody, unfortunately, but another prop that I'd like
to
create.
Yeah,
so.
I still have a handful.
Earplugs. How many of you use earplugs in law school? Okay, a couple of you. Good. But most of you here. For those of you who have not used, for those of you who have used it, will know this. For those of you who have not, who want to consider something else, I will tell you again, for the 2 or 3 days period of the bar exam, we're talking about avoiding distractions. We're talking about clearing the decks. The last thing you want to have happening is finding out that the person sitting across from you is either typing or worse, while they're reading, they're breathing heavy, they have a cold, they have asthma, they have a habit of tapping their pen. It's a floor and not carpeted, and in Virginia you have to dress nicely, and some people include dressing nicely wearing dress shoes. I can't do it here, but they're tapping on the floor. And believe me, the first time you say to them, can you really stop that, they'll probably stop it for about 5 seconds. Because whatever their habit is of doing it, they've been doing it for the last 10 weeks, and they're not going to stop it, okay? The reason I raise them now, is if you think that you have the potential of being distracted by noises, you will be distracted come the day of the bar exam. And what I suggest is that you start getting used to earplugs. And the reason I say start getting used to them, for those of you who've used these, you'll nod in agreement. When you put these things in your ear, they have a habit of kind of accentuating the noises. This sounds strange, inside your head. Not that you're hearing voices or things like that, but kind of the jaw and the movement and things like that, your internal body actually gets a little bit louder, and it takes a little bit of getting used to it. They work extremely effectively in blocking out outside sounds, though. And so the library apparently has been providing them. Take one piece of advice away from here if you're planning on doing it, go get a handful of them. Don't take all of them, but get them a handful and get started. Buy a case of them and share them with your friends. You can actually buy these by the like 500s online and, you know, agree with your friends to sell them for, you know, 10 cents each.
Different colors at CVS represent different amounts of sound it blocks out, so you can get the ultra duty ones that like block out all sounds.
Right, but if you haven't used them, get used to them is all I'm saying. These are standard. They're made by ear. Amigo is what they are. I'll leave now here after. We're going to talk more about this, obviously, in a second. The panelists have something to say about it. So I like to bring these two props, not just really as concrete examples, not just of things that might come up, but things that will come up and things that you can take advantage of. And I can guarantee that a good number of your colleagues, law students across the country, are either not attending a session like this or not getting advice on getting their hands ready for handwriting or their ears ready for sights and sound. Take that edge, because it's going to be important. This is going to be one of those times, and we'll talk about this again in Sights and Sounds as we get started with the panel, where you need to put your blinders on and focus on you. You might study with friends. I had a classmate I focused with. She had a tendency to nod off during the bar prep sessions in class, so I sat behind her with a pencil, and she ended up with marks right on her shoulder after 10 weeks because I had to wake her up periodically. You'll do some studying with buddies, but by the time you get to that exam, this is about me. This is about me passing this exam, not failing it, okay? Let me stop with that for now. We've got a great group of panelists here who I know are energized about talking about this. And so I want to get started. They've got a couple of questions that we threw out to get started with, and then I really want to feel any questions and thoughts and things that we might be missing that the audience wants to raise. So My three colleagues. Jennifer Mullins is here. Jennifer joined the Legal Rhetoric faculty this past year after graduating WCL as a graduate teaching fellow. While at WCL, Jen was editor-in-chief of the journal Gender, Social Policy, and the Law. She also worked at the U.S. State Department in the Executive Office of the President and with the law firm of DLA Piper. And then prior to law school, Jen was a paralegal at Crowell & Morning for 2 years. And she took and passed the New York Bar. Alex Elser on the left is all three of our panelists are 2011 grads. WCL, Alex focused on tax and business law. In his third year, he was managing editor and one of the founding members of the Business Law Review. He's currently enrolled in the tax LLM across town at one of those G schools. And he's going to join Ernst & Young's tax group upon graduation from that program. He added, it's not me, that he's exceptionally charming and a good person in general. I will agree with you that he's a good person. We met a lot of times during his time here. And Alex is one of the few students who actually would just drop in and say, I'm actually doing well, and just wanted to come in to say things are great and whatnot. So I enjoyed that. And Alex was successful on the July Maryland bar. And then seated in between is Kirsten Carlson, who's an associate at Blank Rome, where she's focusing on international trade and government contracts. As a law student, Kirsten was articles editor for International Law Review, ILR, and she published her comment, Fighting Firearms with Fire in the OAS, a critical evaluation of the Inter-American Convention against the manufacturing of and trafficking in firearms, ammunition, and other related materials.
It's a really long
one. It's a long one, Fighting Firearms with Fire. She was also a Myers Fellow in the Legal Rhetoric Program and a law clerk at the U.S. Attorney's Office in Camden. And Kirsten was successful in the Virginia Bar. So, the three primary jurisdictions for which the majority of our graduates sit. Doesn't mean you're necessarily sitting for that one, but you will find as we talk through some of the ins and outs and sights and sounds, the experiences are going to be very similar. If you have questions about why a bar was chosen and why not, and others, we'll certainly get into that. So let me have a seat and start by kind of an easy question. We'll just work our way across the weekend. Jen, starting with you.
Sure.
Talk about how you prepared for the weeks leading up to the exam, let's say starting with commencement and afterwards, and either kind of in line with what the bar prep companies were suggesting, and then maybe some things you might have done in addition or differently than that.
I'd actually like to start before I even started studying for the bar. If you have the lucky opportunity to have some free time during the exam period, where you maybe, because you're in clinic or what have you, don't have a lot of exams, I would take advantage of that exam week to do a little vacation. That's what I did. Because that just kind of like pushes a restart button. Because Kaplan, which is the bar prep company that I use, starts the day after you graduate. So you really don't have that much turnaround time before you have to start preparing. The first month is kind of not as kind of ramped up. It slowly becomes more and more information and more things that you need to do. The bar prep companies kind of give you a schedule for every day so that you know what you need to work on. I just basically followed the lectures. I think it's really important to just recognize what has worked for you during law school and don't try to make any like fundamental changes to how you study. It's not the time to experiment with like flashcards if you've never been a flashcard person, that kind of thing. So I would follow the lectures and then I would do whatever prep work they said to do afterwards. And then I really didn't do all that much extra work until I got to kind of a middle period where I did a quiz where they do a practice exam so I could really gauge how well I was retaining the information. And then from there, I evaluated what areas I need to study more. And then I added my own hours of doing more exam questions, more essays about those specific subject areas, and then kind of went from there. I am a person who learns by writing, so handwriting. So whenever I took a practice exam, I would either handwrite it, outline it myself, or if I was doing multiple choice questions, any answer that I got wrong, I would handwrite the right answer, and I created like a long sheet for myself that was things that I often got wrong, but I was reminding myself to get right the next time. And I found that really helpful, and it was a great kind of review sheet at the end of the summer to get myself kind of remembering things that I had forgotten in the past, and I definitely did not forget them when I was sitting for the bar.
after 4th of July, your life changes, and you have to kind of devote a lot more time. However, the day or two leading up to the exam, I would scale back. Sort of like if you run, you taper a little bit before you have your big race. Your brain is going to not be able to absorb any more information. And instead of pushing things into it and stressing yourself out, it's better to kind of step back, trust yourself, and know that you know enough information, and just kind of do more casual passive studying as opposed to active studying. So that was my kind of an overview of my study experience.
A couple things I'd like to add on to what Jen said. She said Kaplan starts early. Barbary, especially if you're taking Virginia, starts even earlier. They technically had these pre-course thing, like practice tests in specific subject areas that actually started during our exam week and during our graduation week. And I didn't do them because I was taking exams and I wanted to enjoy graduation week, but I was a little bit freaked out that I hadn't done them. Don't worry about it. They don't actually matter at all. They're just sort of to gauge where you stand on specific areas. So I totally agree with Jen. Don't pay attention to those if you're taking Barbary. Try to enjoy as much of your time as you can before you actually start taking the classes. And Barbary for Virginia also starts like the day. It starts like right after commencement, so take some time for yourself because your time will be more devoted to bar prep than to yourself for a little while. I definitely agree with Jen to follow the schedule that the bar prep classes give you, but just a word to the wise. They're pretty intensive, and they'll give you, so you'll go to lecture for 4 hours, and then you're supposed to summarize your notes. You know, and they give you these notes that you fill things into from the lecture, and then you're supposed to summarize them. Do what Jen said. Whatever worked for you in law school, outline. If you're an outline person, outline. If you're a note card person, do note cards. Don't try to change it up. And then they'll give you a bunch of tasks for the day. Do as many of them as you can, but don't freak out if you can't get to them all. Like, it's also, like Dean Jaffe was saying, important to make some time for yourself and do things to that, like, relieve your stress. I did a lot of yoga this summer. It was like my zen time. Uh-huh. I was like, I'm stressed out. I'm going to go to yoga class right now, and I'll do those other two later. But what I would try to do is then catch up over on the weekends for the things you didn't hit during the week. Just, you know, these classes, you pay a lot of money to Barbary or Kaplan to, or whatever other bar prep class you use, because they know, you know, what you need to be hitting. So just make sure you hit them all at some point, but, you know, don't worry if there's some empty slots. I basically did everything pretty similarly to what Jen is saying, although I was really, like I said, really, really careful to take a little bit of time for myself and didn't totally let my social life drop off. I think the trick is like treating bar prep like it's a job with really long hours. You know, you get up in the morning, you do everything you're supposed to do, but you take time to go for a run and to have dinner with your significant other or go have like a late coffee with your friend who's also studying, but don't talk about the bar. You know, just make sure you're making some time for yourself. And that's about all. I think Alex is probably going to talk about, we have certain thoughts on online lectures versus going to class, but whatever you choose to do, I think it's most important to just stick to the schedule and realize that the sacrifice for the next however many 8 weeks or something is worth it in the long run. You'll have plenty of time in August to do whatever you want, but you don't want to do it again. It's worth it to sit your butt in the chair for 12 hours a day, basically.
Yeah, I agree with most of what Jen and Kirsten said. I also just want to make sure, you know, that even though it feels like you have, you know, those 2 empty months where you're not going to class, all you really you're doing is studying, don't think of it as a vacation of any sort. You know, you might be tempted in the first month to say, oh, you know, the bar is 2 months away, I'll kind of study an hour here, an hour there. Can't do that, because you're going to feel a lot more stressed in the last 2 or 3 weeks if you're trying to learn everything you were supposed to learn in the first 2 months. So, you know, take take every single day to study. Even if you do a little bit less in the beginning, make sure that you really are taking advantage of those 2 months, because there's a lot of stuff to learn. And you know, you learned it 3 years ago in contracts, but really need to make sure that you start off strong. Don't go into it thinking, you know, I'm going to take a few weeks, do this, do that. You can't, because you know, the first 2 weeks I did exactly that, and I would have been a lot less stressed near the end if I had just started off right away. Kirsten mentioned the online classes versus the in-class videos. I did Barbary, and I know I had the option of either coming to class or just downloading the videos online every day. So I would highly recommend just going to class and watching them. I know if you might feel more comfortable at home, you can wake up a little bit later. Don't do that, because if you start doing that, you're going to start waking up at noon, taking 6 hours to watch the videos because you can pause them whenever you want. Don't do that. Just go to class. The videos, what, 2.5 hours long, 3 hours long, three and a half hours long.
Yeah, unless you're disciplined enough not to take breaks.
Right. But when you go to class, you just get in there. You can't really leave or you're going to miss stuff. You get in there, get it done, and get out. And then you have a lot more time during the day to study and do other things you want to do. But you really want to go to class. Even though there's the videos, you really want to go to class. Those are mine.
I would actually counter that, because I did not go to class, and I'll tell you why, for two reasons. And I do agree that for the most part, it is good to go to class. If you get
I didn't go to class either, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, and you're regretting that?
I went every day religiously, didn't miss one.
I went the first week, and then I went the last 2 weeks, and I would have felt a lot better if I'd gone the entire time.
So I would say go to the class at first, get a sense of who is in the class with you. You might, like I did, have a peanut gallery in the background, and I did not like that. And if that is the case, I would download them, and I would find a buddy that will watch them with you. I had a friend that lived very close by, and we would alternate whose house we were going to watch them at, and that was an accountability thing. So we did watch them very religiously and at the same time that the in-class people were watching it, but I didn't have to worry about being distracted by people who were talking around me or making fun of why the lecturer had a toy gun that kept pulling out of his coat pocket or what have you. And I could pause it and fill out the form as I needed to. But I agree that if your classroom is quiet and people and everybody's there and very focused, it is far more useful to go to class.
And with the filling stuff in, you know, you can always go back, and if you missed a line here or there, you can always go back and fast forward through the video at home.
Yeah, that's true.
But again, unless you're
the professor on a break.
Right.
This is all about, and it's obvious to you, I'm sure, but this is all about self-discipline and time management, and that's really what you're hearing, and that's the undertone of all of it. I will tell you that the best brownies are baked by law school graduates who are supposed to be studying for the bar, okay? And so part of this is also about, you know, if you're in the classroom during the day, that's great because you're not at home. But if you're at home, all of a sudden that place that was a pigsty for 3 years becomes immaculate because you're looking for things to procrastinate, because that is, again, our natural tendency. I'll clean up for a little while. I don't need to start this right away. I'll do some baking, you know, I'll do this, I'll do that and whatnot, which is not to say we're talking 24/7, turn on the clock and study. You absolutely need a little bit of the outlet to take a break each day and on a regular basis. But it does mean that you have to have discipline to the study components that are there. I'd also say to that end, for those of you, and I agree with what the panel is saying about continuing with your study habits, but if your study habits, by your own acknowledgement, include, I recognize I procrastinated a little bit. I recognize the apartment was not the best place. I recognize that the law school library wasn't the best place because my classmates and I, you know, studied in the same place. Then you might want to, however slightly, start at the beginning and change that habit. I will tell you, for example, if you're staying in D.C., the Bender Law Library, or the Bender Library, can be a terrific place to study. Why? It's huge. You can get lost somewhere on your own without anybody having to find you. And you're free of distractions, except for the McDonald's or the restaurant or something else. You take yourself out of an element. I would do it early on if you wanted to change it, because it's going to be departing from what your study habits might have been. But again, study habits means sitting down with what you need and focusing on it. And if you need a removal of those outside distractions, the phone and email being another one. If you're somebody who's now got email access on whatever PDA you're carrying, you're going to be sitting there and texting your friends, oh my God, this sucks. Oh, I can't believe we've got another 8 weeks, 7 weeks, 6 weeks. If you need that, great. But if you're going to be using that as a crutch and a distraction, not so great. So things to be thinking about. I'm going to invite the panelists. Well, I just want to throw out something about applications. I'm going to ask you in a minute to think about, and I know you all passed, think about something that surprised you in hindsight about the bar, either preparation-wise or something, you know, on the exam itself, something that was different than what you expected.
In a good way or bad way?
Either one. Maybe bad way better, because we can help cure it preemptively for students. One of the things you absolutely want to take care of during your last semester is your application. Okay? You want to talk about clearing the decks, and I don't care if you pick up this form or know for yourself when the deadline is. If the deadline you're filing says early June, and you're thinking, okay, let me get through the spring and through commencement, I'll take care of this stuff later. Huge mistake. Okay? Among the things the bar applications are going to ask for are DMV records. If you caught any violations, you're going to probably have to go back to your DMV and find them. If any of you had a separate business and it got involved in maybe some bankruptcy issues, or if you've had any judgments in which you were named a party, you're probably going to have to track those down for some of the applications. You're also going to need to complete a pre-legal certification. You're not going to be able to get that from the law school. Some of you are going to come in the last minute to the registrar's office and say, I know I had to file this for my application to law school, so it's in my file. I need it from you. The law school here, most law schools across the country, do not provide that certification back to the student, which means you have to go back to your undergrad and get that certification. Don't wait until the last minute. It doesn't mean you necessarily have to go to the school. Oftentimes it can be, you know, it's either an affidavit or sometimes they'll do it with a fax request or whatnot. It'll vary. But you want to, again, clear that clutter. Get the application downloaded. It ought to be for, I think, every jurisdiction by now. The July 1, you know, should be available. If not, it will be shortly. Download it. Take a look at it. Find the things you need to address. Get those things collected. When I mentioned off the top that I have my file in my desk drawer, and anybody who doesn't believe me, come to my office. I swear it's there. You will see from flipping through it, you're going to have a lot of information. Addresses where you were for the last 5 years. Employers for the last 7 to 10 years. You may know that stuff well, but if your memory's more like mine, a lot of that stuff's giga. You know, garbage in, garbage out. If I did it 5, 7 years ago, I don't remember it. I don't need it anymore. You're going to need it for this application. And you don't want to get tripped up because you didn't have the info and you decided to skip on it. And that particular Board of Bar Examiners does a background check and they find a gap that shouldn't have been there. It's not necessarily that you're being deceitful, but they're just wondering, one, whether you were being deceitful, and two, whether you're really, you know, applying to the task at hand. You don't want to get jammed up with that. Most, I think every jurisdiction is going to compel a graduate to have at least a minimum, a meeting with an attorney, kind of the character and fitness portion. Some of them don't. Okay, for Maryland, I know that I did. I had to drive way out to Havre de Grace to have about a 5-minute conversation with an attorney who said, your file looks good, you know, everything's great, anything you need to share with me? No, great, go with God, you know, and you're fine. That was wonderful. But I had to do it. And so you don't want to have a conversation where they say, well, I noticed something here, or they happen to have done a background check here and were curious about something, because then the red flags start to rise and you may find yourself being called before a Board of Bar Examiner for something that you thought was innocent. Again, clear the decks of that. If there are any issues that need to be addressed, address them ahead of time. Okay? I want to give a little bit of time because I didn't know if anything would have jumped out to the panelists, but let me jump back to Alex. Something that, and again, granted you all passed, so you're thinking, well, nothing really surprised me, but something that just came up that was new, either for good or for bad, that just struck me as something that was, you know, would have been helpful to know the second time around if I had to do it again.
This is going to seem obvious, but just the sheer volume of information there is to learn, you don't really think about it. You know, you studied all this in the first 2 years, I guess, but there's really just so much you go over. All the little rules for every possible subject, they all come up. Every little minor rule you might have thought of or learned in the first years of law school, they all come up in the exam. So there's just, you know, this book, our Barbary book, you know, there's just one of seven, I think, is, you know, this thick. Just the amount of stuff there's to really go over, kind of, I didn't really realize we'd be learning all of law school again in 9 or 10 weeks.
I don't know that this is super, that I would go back and change anything, but something I didn't realize that you could study so hard and still be, like, hit a major roadblock during the exam. So this is actually bad and good. I had a major problem on the exam. One of my strengths when I was preparing was, like, the essays. I was just getting great grades on the essays. Not doing so hot on the MBE. Ended up having to focus on that later. But I was doing really well on the essays, especially certain subjects. And then I hit, you know, they give you 36 minutes for each essay or however much time for your state. And I got to one of the questions, and I just said, I don't know the answer. I have no idea what this is asking me. And I spent the entire 36 minutes trying to figure out how to answer this four-part wills and trusts question. I never took wills and trusts in law school, and even though I had been doing really well on the practice exams, I just had no clue. And I finally looked at my watch and I said, I answered two of the sub-questions kind of, but I was really pulling it out of nowhere, and didn't answer two of the other questions. And then I was like, you have to move on. You have to move on. And I was totally freaked out and totally shocked, because that had not happened to me at all while I was preparing. Not once was I stumped like that. And I went through, and then it turned out, like, the next two questions, I rocked them. I knew exactly, got them done quickly, caught up, and I was really worried, but it ends up being fine. I think that's what surprised me, is that, A, you can hit a major roadblock that you didn't hit when you were preparing, but at the same time, if you just stay calm and, like, stay on task, it ends up being okay, because you'll make it up somewhere else. So don't be totally alarmed if something like that happens.
And don't you psych yourself out for the balance of what
you're
saying.
Yeah, you just have to be like, cut your losses, move on, do well on the rest of it.
Make up something. Yeah. I think along those same lines, the thing that surprised me most was the amount of stamina that you need to make it through the 2 days. I did not realize how exhausting it would be to do. So let me back up and say, the structure of the exam is, the first day is your state-specific material, and that might be structured in different ways, but typically in New York, it's 3 hours, 3.5 hours in the morning, and like 3.5 hours in the afternoon with an hour and a half break in the middle. That's a long time. And then you have to do the same thing the next day with just 200 multiple choice questions. So I think I didn't realize until I was doing a full-fledged practice exam in the middle of my Kaplan course how exhausted I was going to be an hour into the afternoon of the first day. And as soon as I realized that in my practice exam, I realized, gosh, I really need to work on my stamina. I need to bring an entire bag of sour jelly belly beans so that I have a constant supply of sugar in my bloodstream. And I need to work on doing a large amount of work, like a large time chunk, on a regular basis. So consider doing maybe like 3 hour blocks of studying, whether it's 3 hours or build yourself up, but you know, build up that stamina, because that could hit you. You might know everything that you need to know, but if you are like dragging to like move on to the next multiple choice question, and technically you need to be moving on to the next multiple choice question like every minute and a half, you are going to die. You're not going to make it through everything because you're just too tired.
Can I just follow up with that? Be aware of what you can and can't do in your respective state.
Yeah.
In Virginia, no drinks, no food. So when you're building your stamina, do it without drinks and food, because you're allowed like a plastic baggie with a pencil and an eraser and your license, and that's about it.
We're gonna talk about the actual days of the exam in just a second. I just want to follow up on a couple of points here. The grading, if you want to kind of think ahead, and then as part of your preparation on the essay portion anyway, because the multi-state is what it is. As Jen pointed out, you're going to be looking at 200 multiple choice questions over 6 hours. Okay, 180 minutes. I can't do the math. Basically, each question you're looking at 1.8 minutes per question. Okay, so we want to look at that. And the best way to address these or to summarize these questions is that there's only one right answer, but it's arguable that if you had an entire day to debate the answers, you might be able to say that the next best answer was 90% correct. It's not like, well, one's obvious and the others are throwaways. Ideally, one's maybe a throwaway and then you get stuck on a couple, but they're challenging. You're going to need the time for that. On the essay portion, where there's a little bit greater level of subjectivity, one way to look at the way I want to rack up points is to visualize what is actually the case in most situations, which is that attorneys are getting paid to grade these exams. And so if you visualize an attorney who's got a stack of exams and is in a cab between one meeting to the other, or going home or whatever, or got the TV in the background, they've got a kind of a little bit of a template of the type of answers you're supposed to be provided. This isn't a beautifully structured essay that's got a topic sentence and it flows nicely and there's smiley faces and transitions and everything else. We want black letter law, okay? And so they've been given by the Board of Bar Examiners, here are the points we expect the test takers to take. And if they see it, they're going to check it, they're going to put a point, move on. Check it, put a point, move on. And then they're going to total them up. So as Kirsten was pointing out, If you're hitting a roadblock, you know, you might not end up wanting to wait even the full slot of time for that essay and say, shoot, this isn't coming back to me. If it does, maybe I'll squeeze in some time in the back end, but I'm going to try to rack up the points on the other side. Okay, so it's not hitting that A, and that's the other thing to know. You don't need to hit the A. You need to answer enough to get over the threshold to prove minimum competency in the jurisdiction. That's really what they're looking for. Okay? And as to stamina, I would just say, you know, echoing everything that Jen said, if I were taking the exam again, and I think I did this when I was prepping for it, at least during the last week to 2 weeks, if not before, start getting yourself in the mode of, if this exam is running 9 to 12, and then, you know, 1 or 1:30 to 4, 4:30, whatever it is, start making that your day to a large degree. Because if you're folks who said, okay, I get all this stuff, I'm going to focus, I'm going to structure, but I don't get up early in the morning, you know, and the prep classes are in the afternoon, so that's working great for me. Well, guess what? Unlike some of you, your classmates, who've been able to come to student affairs when you showed up an hour late for an exam and actually get some relief after, you know, breaking us down, not going to happen in the bar exam, okay? You show up an hour late, I don't think they're going to let you in. And if they do let you in, you've lost that hour. That exam, you're not passing that exam. So if you're not in the habit of getting up at 7 or 7:30 or 8 or whatever it is and having your butt in a chair and ready to go by 9 or whatever that hour is, get into that habit. And I say 2 weeks at the latest. If this is breaking a habit for some of you, because at least in your last year, second and third years, you've been able to arrange your schedule and it's been later in the day because you're not an early riser, again, I can guarantee you those exams are starting in the morning. That's not changing come July. So start getting in the mindset for that. What I'd like to do is shift to kind of talking about the actual sights and sounds of the bar. This is kind of the fun stuff. And the stuff that you will, I think, appreciate, but not fun stuff. I meant to start by thanking the panelists, because although they all passed it, they actually have to relive some of the experiences that you really don't want to go through a second time.
I'm taking it again in July.
And some are reliving it, actually. Okay. My condolences, and I'm sure you have to and aren't doing it just for pleasure. But actually just kind of giving you a little bit of a sense of the ramp up to it. And so I'm going to invite the panelists to talk about a couple of things in turn. Hotel arrangements, you know, what I did for it if you needed to, if you weren't driving, and if you had the option of driving because you were living nearby but chose a hotel anyway, maybe reference that. And then for each of you, kind of where you physically took the exam, what it was like the day of, and let's go from there. So, Jen.
Okay, so for the New York Bar Exam, there is one day where you get to go onto their website. Everybody who is going to be taking the New York Bar goes onto their website and selects the location that they want to take it. It is a shit show. Pardon my French. The website usually crashes at least 3 times. Do not expect to get into the New York City location or the White Plains location. I honestly would not want to take it there because that is the, they do it in the, yeah, it's huge. It's gigantic. There's only one bathroom. I don't think it's in the hall that you're in, so you have to wait in line to go to the bathroom. It's disgusting. So I would recommend trying to go for one of the smaller locations, either Albany or Buffalo. They're easier to get as far as the location, and I think you'll find that it's probably more inexpensive to go to one of those locations for the actual exam. I was in Buffalo. As soon, like literally the minute after you get your location and you have verified it, go find a hotel. Within 24 hours, every single hotel in any one of those cities is completely booked, and you will have to find some location outside of whatever city that you are in, and you will have to commute in, take a cab, do whatever you need to. It's better to find something that's close by that you can just walk to the location. If you get in Albany, they have 3 different locations in Albany that they administer the test, and you should get a hotel reservation close to each one of those 3 locations, because you will not find out which location you have been assigned to until 2 weeks before the actual exam. Yes, these are the things that I did not know before I actually started to take this. As far as hotel reservations are concerned, you will be tempted to stay with your friends. I do not recommend this. I suggest you find somebody who's going to be chill, who is not going to be freaking out the day before the exam because their stress will wear off on you. I think that's true for studying generally. If you want to study with other people, which I do recommend just to bounce off ideas, you should find somebody who is not going to stress you out. When you get there, wherever you are, there, as at least for the New York Bar Exam, the entire city, whatever city you choose, is going to be just teeming with people. people who are taking the exam. It will be like a stress paradise. So I suggest hiding out. Do not try to interact with people. Don't go to the coffee shop. Just kind of chill. Watch Disney movies if you're a girl and you like doing that. I like doing that. just chill, relax, take it easy. And then the first day of the bar exam in New York is the day that you're allowed to use a computer because it's the state-specific material and you can take your essays. In order to get into the location, you have to stand in line so they can inspect your computer. They make you open it up, empty out the CD-ROM drive, everything. It's ridiculous. So the line is wrapped around a couple blocks. Get there early so that you can get to your seat and settle in and feel comfortable wherever you are. You're going to be in a very large room with lots of other people. They just like it's convention centers that they just put rows and rows and rows and rows and rows and rows of seats and like, you know, just like, you know, the metal folding chairs and like just, you know, wooden tables. Get comfortable, get settled, to kind of find your happy place. And then the exam itself is you just need to get into a zone. I definitely recommend the earplugs because think about when you're in an exam here and you only have maybe 89 other people in the classroom and they're all typing and it's just nothing like this. Now take that and times it by 100. And that's what it sounds like in these giant convention halls. It's really easy to get distracted and just be overwhelmed. So just get your earplugs in and just get into a groove. I find it really helpful to get up every once in a while and go to the bathroom, even if I don't have to go, just to get up, kind of be like, okay, I'm doing well, like I'm right on time, this is good. New York allows you to bring in water and a quiet snack, which they do not define. You are not allowed to wear flip-flops, so you have to wear something quiet, and they're kind of weird about sweaters and jackets and what have you. You have to leave, have everything kind of separate from you so that you don't have a cheat sheet or what have you. They have food that you can order at whatever location you're at for lunch. I strongly recommend that you order a box lunch at the location that you're at because there's nowhere else to get food, let alone get it within the time period that you need to get it. I would take my lunch and take it back to my hotel room because I was close enough, and I would just step away from everybody, maybe review a couple sheets, because if you didn't get a Will's question in the morning, you know you're going to get a Will's question in the afternoon. And then I would just go back and keep taking the exam. They give us these like crazy. It's like a part. It's like a going to a concert. They give you a wristband, and you know everybody's walking around with their wristband so that they know that they can come back in and what have you. I know, right? And so we would just avoid anybody with a wristband on for the rest of the 2 days. And then at the end of the second day, everybody literally pieces out as soon as the exam is done. People fly out as soon as it's over. There's really no reason to stay in Buffalo other than taking the bar exam. No offense to anybody who's from Buffalo. What's that? The casino? I guess if you want to go to a casino, you could. And that's the end of taking the bar exam in New York.
So I took the bar exam in Virginia, and it's less of an administrative headache than New York because there's just way less people. But you have to go to Roanoke, which is this sort of tiny little town down in the mountains, and it's actually like pretty economically depressed, and the whole experience is just a little bit depressing. So as far as hotels and stuff go, down in Roanoke, if any of you are taking that, it's not really like New York at all. If you have money to spend, there's a decent, pretty nice, like, DoubleTree hotel basically across the street from the convention center where you take it. I booked a room by myself because when I'm taking exams, I prefer to be by myself and not really talking to anyone. So, you know, other people shared rooms. Just do whatever works for you. There are many cheaper options, like, you know, cheaper sort of from Motel 6 to Holiday Inn or whatever, you know, we're all within 10-15 minutes driving distance of the convention center, so I don't think it really matters. You can just book it online, and whatever's within your price range would work. The the Virginia exam is in this huge convention center, and it's the same kind of thing where you have to show up early, and you're standing outside waiting for them to open the doors, except you're all in a suit. So it's like a sea of gray everywhere. And that whole waiting period is pretty stressful. I actually wish I hadn't shown up as early as I did. I showed up like 20 minutes ahead of time, and that was just... I ended up standing there before they opened the doors for 20 minutes. So I would get there maybe 5-10 minutes before they tell you to show up. Same kind of thing. They inspect everything. You have your laptop, no case. Nothing's allowed inside of it. They look in it. You're allowed one little baggie, like I said, with three pencils, a pencil sharpener, an eraser, and your license or something. No food, no drinks, nothing like that. When you walk in, it's like a massive sea of people, all stressed out and tense, and they have like a big chart where you look up where your alphabet, where this part of the alphabet is sitting in this huge convention center room, and you have assigned tables. Each table has a little plug on it. I was really freaked out that there weren't going to be enough plugs or something was going to happen. They had it totally set up. We were in big, long tables that went across the entire convention center with your name all set out. Anything you had to fill out was there. It was pretty... Everything was prearranged for you, so it wasn't actually as bad as I thought it was going to be. Trying to think... it's a better situation than the one in New York City, like plenty of back rooms. It was actually pretty calm. I think, what else did you mention? Yeah, it was just much more organized. Oh, yeah, lunch. So that's the difference. I don't think enough people take the Virginia exam from AU for AU to have like a big presence. In Roanoke, like some of the schools, UVA, William & Mary, all those Virginia schools have their alumni associations, have big, these like nice set up lunches for them and everything. I wouldn't have wanted to be around anybody anyway, so I wasn't really that upset about it. I brought my lunch in a cooler. I brought food down with me to Roanoke in a cooler, and I brought a cooler with me the first day because I had had that issue with the essay in the morning I couldn't finish. I went and I sat in my car and I put the music up really loud and I like sang and just started to like de-stress a little and I ate my lunch and it was fine. Second day I did the same thing, but they had some green space. I sort of just put my headphones on, sat outside and tried to just be calm. If you're good with interacting with people, people are going to be talking about the exam questions, and I just wanted no part of that. But again, that's your preference. If you're the kind of person that likes to do that, then there will be thousands of people there to do that with. There's not really any other food options unless you bring your own, or some people had, like, I saw people's wives and husbands bringing them food, things like that, their kids. If you have somebody do that for you, that's awesome. But if you don't bring your own food or have something like that, there's a McDonald's across the street, which has a line around the block. Or you could go back to the hotel. But I didn't want to do that because, it just seemed like too much time to go. You have to cross the highway and all this stuff and then come back. I just thought it was simpler to have a cooler, and I was definitely not alone in that. A lot of people brought pre-prepared food and things like that.
It's another one of those throwaways again, but if you're used to certain eating habits and whatnot, why not keep that within your control? And also, last place I would want to be in a line, around McDonald's, waiting both for McDonald's food, which is great, but I don't think I want to be eating that kind of food before I've got 3 hours in an afternoon. And I know I don't want to be standing in line with folks, some of whom are going to be in, and we could talk about this as we go through. It is virtually guaranteed that at the end of the first day of the exam, as you're walking out, you will come across, if not trip across, at least one individual who has fallen apart. Okay, literally crying on the corner. Oh my God, already asking the questions like, what was that essay question about? what was that Will's question about that I couldn't answer? Somebody's going to be doing it, and people are going to be falling apart completely. You just, it's that time that, again, those blinders are coming up. I mean, we're a generous student community. We're trained to help each other. It's one of the great things about this school. This isn't the time for that. This is the time for me and me only. And if that person, unless it's your best friend, you cannot do anything to help that individual. And the Good Samaritan law does not apply. The worst thing you can do, unfortunately, is sit down and say, it's okay, it's going to be okay. Because they're going to turn around and say, no, it isn't. It turns out that was a Will's question. And you're like, oh my God, that was a Will's question? And now you've been sucked down their hole into something that you were perfectly fine with. So, again, this is me, me, me. Blinders, I'm taking care of myself for 2 days, 3 days, and then I'll go back and hug everybody in the world, but not before that.
I forgot to say one quick thing. In the time between, don't, like, sit in your room and cram for 6 hours, because if you don't know it by then, you're not going to know it. Like, just relax. Like, Jen said she stayed in her room and watched movies, but I was going to go stir crazy if I sat there. So I went for a walk into Roanoke, which was fine. And I actually ran into this girl from GW who was in my barber class. And we sort of looked at each other, and I was like, I don't want to talk about the exam. And she was like, yeah, I don't either. So we went and had dinner together. I had a glass of wine. I went home, and I went to sleep. It was really great. So just, like, don't sit in the hotel and cram, because you're just going to stretch yourself out.
Alex, Maryland.
So I took it at the College Park campus, University of Maryland, and you can either take it there or down in Baltimore City, or up in Baltimore City. I chose the College Park campus, first of all, because I went there and I was familiar with it, but also because it's just a really calming and serene campus, so you're not as stressed, you don't feel as frantic as you are in the middle of the city. In terms of food options, there are a lot of them because it's a college campus, so they're really just down Route 1. If you can, at some point, go and visit the campus for 25 minutes, find out where the parking is, because it gets confusing. And I took it in the Record Armory, so, you know, another big hall, or converted basketball court, 500-600 people. Middle campus, again, very nice, especially in the summer. It doesn't make you crazy, so I would recommend taking it there if you can. All the food options are down on Route 1, so it's a 5-minute walk. A lot of the Ramada Days, Holiday Inns up the street. They provide water. They have these giant jugs and glasses of water, so they have that. Food, I think you can bring non-noisy snacks. Other than that, yeah, just go check it out if you have a moment at some point. It's actually nice, so you know what you're getting into. Other than that, it's what the ladies next to me said.
I think we can best serve the folks who are here for kind of the balance of the time here to take some questions on things that are on your mind about it that we might be missing. Again, it's different for every student, and this is a great opportunity to pick the brains of either a particular jurisdiction, or again, by extrapolation, you can imagine that the experiences the panelists had are going to be similar with other classmates in other jurisdictions. So,
I was wondering how you chose your prep course, and especially if you had particular challenges with multiple choice, and one of those prep courses is good for that.
Yeah, so the way that I chose my prep course was that I took each one of their MPRE preps, which are both free, and I decided which one I liked better, like as far as which one I felt I was retaining more information from, because they have different styles. I, too, am awful at multiple choice. I really liked how Kaplan worked through. They have videos for every single, when you do a practice multiple choice MBE, they have videos that go through every single answer and explain why one answer is better than the other, which I found really helpful. I really need to listen to people rather than read things. So I that's why I chose Kaplan. And they also had some really good discounts for if you're an ABA member or if you want to go into public interest.
How many of you, just by show of hands, have not finalized the jurisdiction for which you're sitting for the bar? Okay, a good number of you. I throw this out somewhat hesitantly because I think it cuts a little bit against the grain of what we talked about off the top, but I put it out there nonetheless. Jurisdictions will vary to some degree, and some of them will provide some information in terms of the relative balancing and the scoring of the multi-state portion versus the SA portion. And I raise this in particular because Maryland's distribution is roughly 60% essay, and 40% MBE. Okay, and they and New York as well. Okay, New York has a little bit more balancing, I think, in terms of you can tank a little bit more on one side. But and again, Myra, as I mentioned, is very good at this. But Maryland in particular. Now, the reason I hesitate in saying that is that, on the one hand, I don't want to suggest you gravitate to Maryland simply in saying, I don't do well on multiple choice, so let me do that because it'll maximize my scoring, because you're feeding it to some of the psych out, which is that you ought to nail the multiple choice regardless of what you do. But if you know in your heart of hearts, you know, you don't know how you got into college because your SATs were awful on the multiple choice portion, and you just squeaked in getting into, you know, here, or if you transferred from somewhere else on the LSATs, and thought the multiple choice, and you just believe for yourself that multiple choice is just the death knell for you, and you're really going to drag yourself down with it, you might consider assessing some of the jurisdictions on the basis of the relative value of the two different components to it. So I put a little bit of stock into it, particularly I'd say greater if you're not hung up on a jurisdiction. Of course, if you're taking one particular reason, stay with that and just keep yourself absolutely positive on the fact that you do as well as you expect to do on both portions of it.
So I took Barbary and well, I had put that deposit down when I was a 1L to sort of lock in that rate. I don't know if any of you guys did that, but the rates go up every year and you can put money down when you were a 1L to pay the rate that was in place when you were 1L.
And Kevin will credit you that if you switch.
Yeah, but it was only $150, so in the grand scheme of how much this thing cost, it was. Plus, I was very fortunate and my locker room was paying for all of my prep classes and everything, so that wasn't a major concern. I went with Barbary primarily because it's sort of like the tried and true. And actually, I did both Barbary and Kaplan for MPRE, and I liked Kaplan better, but I thought Barbary has been the bar prep thing for just years and years and years, and I'm just going to do that. Ultimately, I don't think it matters. I was not super strong in multiple choice either. That was the MBE was my weakness, but I did just fine with Barbary. They, one thing I should tell you, like, you'll get the same skills from both classes, I think, but like Kaplan will front load, at least my experience from watching my friends, they'll front load the multiple choice stuff, whereas Barbary, the multiple choice stuff comes at the end. So I chose Barbary for that reason, but I don't know that it matters.
I would also add Kaplan has more opportunities to do essays, so if you feel like you're going to really struggle on the essays, they will grade as many as you submit online before the last week before the exam. But again, both of them are teaching the same material. It's really about whichever one you think you're going to learn the best from.
Yeah.
Well, I went with Barbary because they had donuts that day, but I'm sure Kaplan had something as well the next day, but I just was attracted by the donuts. But they're both really the same thing, I guess. I mean, I didn't really take Kaplan, but the one thing about Barbary is, at least on the videos, they tell you that the questions they provide are actually harder than the ones that are on the exam. I actually found the exam questions to be harder than at least their early questions, but all the Barbary books had, I think the very last part had extra hard questions, so I'd recommend doing those, because some of the questions I saw on the bar...
Not at first, though.
What's that?
Not at first.
But you should definitely do some of the super hard questions at the end they provide, because a lot of those type of questions are going to end up on the exam. And also, the way I studied for the multiple choice probably 75% of my studying time. I don't know if that works for everyone, but you know, you think multiple choice is easier, it's multiple choice, but the multiple choice questions get really difficult. And you know, with the essays, especially for the 6 or 7 topics that appear both in the essays and the multiple choice, you'll do better. At least I felt that I did better on the essays just from having done so many multiple choice questions. But I'd really recommend not skipping the multiple choice practices, because you learn how they're formulated. You learn, after you've done 2,000 of them or whatever it is, you just know where a question's headed, and you save yourself a lot of time. So really, really study the multiple choice questions, because even though it's worth a third, actually the people that I know who didn't pass, they all got well above what's necessary to pass for the essays, but they struggle with the multiple choice. So essays are important, no question, but at the end of the day, don't skip over the multiple choice, because not only that, even if you excel at the essays, if you want to wave into DC, there's a minimum score you have to get on the multiple choice anyway. So
you shouldn't gloss over that, and just make sure at a certain point, just reading your notes is kind of ineffective after a while. You start just doing the questions, because that's how you really learn how they're asked and how they're supposed to be answered.
One other thing is that both Barbary and Kaplan have like supplemental, in addition to your normal class, they'll have supplemental optional classes or like little mini preps for the MBE or for essays. Like in Barbary, if you really stunk at either one, you could go on the weekend and do like a, you know, crash course in essay writing or something like that. And then what's the Kaplan multiple choice thing called?
Oh, at the end.
Because some people that I know, if you have the money for it, some people did Barbary, and then they did this like special Kaplan multiple choice, I forget what it's called, but there's like a special 2-day course that you can pay in a little extra money for that's just Kaplan's how to take the multiple choice section.
PMBR.
So, you know, there are those options, and Barbary also had an additional multiple choice section thing too. So
yeah, the thing to know is Kaplan started off as just doing the multiple choice section. That's all they specialized in. And in fact, Barbary would use them for just that section and send their students over to just do a special PMBR review of multiple choice section of the exam. And they have since been expanding and trying to compete with Barbary to try to kind of get into certain states. They are only in certain states as far as offering state-specific material, so I would look online and see which ones they're offering and see how long they've been offering them and what they are offering before choosing between the two, because some states it might actually be better to do Barbary because they've been doing it for longer, but it really depends on the state and depends on your preferences as far as what you're taking. I would also echo what Alex said about the multiple choice section. It is really easy to BS an essay. Even if you don't know the rule, I believe it's Barbary professors that tell you make up a rule and then apply that rule and make up an exception to your made-up rule. Like, they don't care about the rule as much as your application, but there is no way to BS these multiple choice questions. There's no way to, if you don't know the answer, you don't know the answer.
You're going to waste a lot of time really trying to figure out what they're even asking sometimes.
Exactly. So just move on and,
Do any of you leave any of the practice multiple choice questions on the table? In other words, not answer all of the sample questions that were given to you by
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
They have
3,000 questions. They have so many.
There's no way to answer all of them, I don't think, unless you study 15 hours a day. But.
And I spent the last 2 weeks, I did at least 100 questions a day for the last 2 weeks, and I still left them so blank.
The back.
Do any of you have information or know anyone who did a bar for New York and New Jersey, like two states?
I know a bunch of people who did.
Okay, do you guys have any information about that or about that?
I wish I could have taken Maryland and Virginia at the same time.
Yeah.
It's like usually right there, like a big state and a small state, kind of. Right. You can combine them. And a lot, there's going to be so much overlap between the substantive law and the state days that it's actually, my understanding is it's really not that bad because, you know, Virginia's kind of an exception because Virginia is just, like, one of the Barbary professors said, if you like 16th century, you'll love Virginia law. It's like really a little crazy, but for the most part, like agency and partnership are the same everywhere, or you know, torts is the same, well, that's not state specific, but you get what I'm saying. It's if you can knock them both out at once, I would.
The bigger thing is not to is stamina because it's 3 days.
Yeah,
so you'll start in New York, you'll take New York, you'll take the MBE, and then you'll have to go somewhere else to take New Jersey. So that's the biggest issue, I think.
And we've had differing opinions on that over the years from the so-called administrative side, and I think Myra would agree to this tomorrow. Our preference has always been, unless you need both bars, which is rare for a graduate, the notion of doubling down and enhancing your chances of passing one, being weighed against the additional anxieties of whatever additional prep it is, however nominal for the second state, and whatever transportation issues that may relate to some additional stress,
to us is not worth adding it. You focus on the one bar, put your eggs in that basket, you'll do fine in that one, worry about the next one if you have to at a later time, either because the law firm asks or you're thinking about moving and the reciprocity for the other jurisdiction doesn't work. So there's no, again, you're going to get different opinions, but I've got to, you know, at least share that our focus is simply, has typically been focus on one, take one, the double down thing they have, you know, it's other trapdoors.
Just make sure you prepare in advance. If you're going to do New York and New Jersey, a friend of mine did that, and just make sure she had to take a car from New York to New Jersey. Just make sure you have all of your preparations and, you know, everything, because that triples your stress if you need to travel 200 miles and you don't know where you're going.
Here are a couple of hands. Yes.
I have a question about, I guess, the scheduling. How many hours of your week are actually scheduled? Is it realistic to think that you might be able to take the weekend off or a Sunday off, or do you really just work, you know, all the way through the first month?
The first month, you can definitely take a weekend off or a Sunday off. The only real scheduling, at least if you go to the classes, is the 3-hour, 3.5-hour videos. But, you know, they kind of, they have a schedule of how many practices you should get done every day. I think I got through maybe 65 to 70% of the practices, at least according to the schedule. At a certain point, I just stopped doing the schedule and just did practice questions. But for the first month, you can definitely take a week or a weekend off, provided you really put in a solid, I'd say, 6 to 8 hours a day for the week, at least, I guess.
Yeah.
At least for the first month, you could probably take
The rule of thumb is that after 4th of July, like,
you shouldn't take it.
You really need to double down, but before that, it's okay to take, you know, if you want Saturday, you want to go have a day trip with your friends, like, do it. And you can make up for it later. Like I was saying, you know, you can front load some of the work that's technically scheduled for that day. You know, you can figure it out. But once July hits, I wouldn't recommend doing that.
Yeah, I think you should think about it as like a 40-hour a week job. And I still think that you should take time off after July, like maybe like half a day, not the full weekend, but just maybe kind of scale and being not doing as serious work on the weekend, but still getting some things in. You don't want to like completely overwhelm yourself, but definitely you need to ramp it up after 4th of July.
And I've heard that the classes aren't interactive, so you can't ask, well, because they're videos, obviously, you can't ask questions, but how did you find the after-hours help, like when you had questions and, you know, were you able to call representatives and ask questions to clarify?
I was really happy with Kaplan's online ask an attorney function. You can just email a question and they would get back to you within 24 hours. And it was even sometimes the specific person who was on the video. And all of the professors on the videos will give you their email addresses at the beginning of their lecture, so that they really do answer the questions that you send in.
So I actually did one of the things I didn't mention when we were talking about how you picked a prep class was you might want to pay attention to the prep class's locations and whether they're live or whether you're going to go sit in a room and watch a video. All but one of my lectures was live, and since there was a professor standing there lecturing, and that's part of the reason I chose that location and everything, because I like that. So you can't ask questions, but, you know, there's a couple breaks, and you can go talk to the professor during the breaks. Hey, I missed this question, or I didn't understand this. They'll explain it to you. I never actually reached out to... I don't do that stuff. I would either talk to my friend or try to figure it out. You know, they give you these massive books that you can kind of figure it out on your own, too. So I can't speak to, like, their after-hours help. But their essay grading was great. And I did email the essay grader to ask a couple questions about my essays.
Yeah, I watched the videos in class for my program. But I actually emailed one of the professors about a question, and he teaches at University of Texas, and he got back to me, I think, within a day. So I did Barbary, at least for that. I think they're pretty solid, most of them are.
Was it David Epstein?
Yes. I love that guy.
The professors are pretty quirky.
One of them sings.
Did you do this year?
She sings. One of them sings a lot.
Yes.
From Maryland, I've heard about another bar prep course, Shimmer, and I'm wondering if you've heard anything about that.
I know it's just a small specialized course just for Maryland, but that's all at Kirk. I just really did Barbara.
I know a little bit of information about Shema. They are a smaller company. I think they cap by design. I think they cap their program each year at, last I checked, it was about 100. Maybe they went up to 150, no more than that. And I believe what they focus solely on the Maryland bar. Their sessions are all live, and I believe if their program continues as it has, they further break down the group of their students to smaller groups of 12 or 15 on, I think, a weekly basis to try to work on some of the individual kind of structure sets. We have seen historically when students come in who are both looking at the Maryland bar and have concerns that may relate to things that are a little more profound about their concerns about test taking, and perhaps combined with the notion of I need somebody on my back for the 10 weeks that I'm doing this, so I'm really concerned about my self-discipline, self-scheduling, everything else. We've seen graduates who've had success there. I also think that they've had a decent spate of success with graduates who have failed the bar, Maryland, using either on their own or somewhere else, and then have gone to them for that additional. They've had good pass rates in that regard. You can, I think it's Shemer, just as it sounds. Yeah, S-H-R-S-E-H-E-M-E. Yes, ma'am.
If you're taking the bar prep class in D.C., I mean, at school, and then you're taking the New York bar, for example, how many days before the bar starts should you go to New York?
The day before.
The day before?
Yeah, no, there's no reason to get there any earlier, especially, I mean, there's nothing to do.
No snow in July.
There's nothing to do up there. It's best to just get up there the day before.
For the New York bar, did you take the classes in D.C.?
Mm-hmm.
And you watched them on the video, like a video?
Yeah. Yeah, they're not. They're just their standard videos that they've already recorded. They're not like being shown live somewhere and you're streaming it or what have you. They're all just already on their website. You could watch them at your own leisure. If you wanted to watch like two in a day, you could do that.
But you said that you had the option to go to like a live class.
I had the option to go and watch the videos in the classroom at Howard. Yeah, that's where they did it last year.
Questions.
Can you talk a little bit more about your study partner? I know you said that you would sit and watch her, or I guess after the videos, but if you guys had study partners, how did you choose them and did you find them helpful?
I live close to somebody who's also taking the New York bar, and I would watch the videos with her as opposed to shopping up to Howard to watch them. So we were study partners in that sense. I tend to not want to study with other people until I feel comfortable with the material myself. So what I would do is we would watch the videos, and then I would be studying, and she would be studying quietly at the same table, and then occasionally if we had a question, we would ask each other. And then after we felt like we were comfortable with the material, we would kind of quiz each other, talk back and forth about, you know, questions that we had, because we both study kind of similarly. I think if you're going to use a study partner, find somebody who studies in a similar way that you do and would be helpful to you rather than stress you out. And I just happen to, you know that she and I studied very similarly, and it worked out fairly well. I will say that as the bar was creeping closer, she became more stressed and would study longer hours than I did, and I would be like, okay, I'm going home because you're crazy, and I can't study as many hours as you, and that's okay. If you do end up studying with somebody who kind of ramps it up in a different style than you do, it's really important not to feel like crap, like, I'm not studying as much as she is, like, is that okay? Like, separate yourself from that person.
I'm pretty sure I know who she's talking about, but I studied, she's one of my very good friends, and I studied with her after my classes ended, and she was starting to stress me out, so I had to temporarily break up with her. You may need to temporarily break up with some of your friends and be like, look, I love you, but we're not hanging out until after the bar exam, because I just can't, right now.
And that's what I did with her as well.
She's now in therapy. She's
but you know what? She passed.
She passed. She passed.
Totally dumped.
And is employed, so
yeah.
All good.
Yes. Go ahead.
Oh, I mean, go ahead.
I've got nothing. I can't study with anyone.
I just was curious about the details of waving into D.C., like what the time frame is for that, and how
Usually, I think it takes
8 months.
Eight months to a year. One of my friends is just moving to DC now, and he passed the bar in 2010, July. I think you said that the minimum MBE.
I'm doing it right now.
The minimum MBE score is 133. Mm-hmm. That's raw. You guys think for scale?
No, scale.
Scale. Okay, so the raw score is lower, obviously 117 or something like that. But
not a very high MBE requirement.
But again, that's why you want to make sure that do well enough in MBE.
You will have to go through the character and fitness portion again, although depending on your state, it might be less intensive, and you can use all the same information. Like, Virginia's was kind of a pain. I had to do what Dean Jaffe said. I had to get all these records, all these originals of everything. No. DC follows what's the National Conference of Bar Examiners application, and you don't really have to get that many original records. Like, the only records I have to get are my MPRE score, which I have in my email, and court records that I already had for my Virginia application, and I can just photocopy them. So it's not actually, the only reason I haven't turned it in is because I've been procrastinating on doing it. But know that you'll have to, just kind of a pain, you have to go through and list all your residences for the last 10 years. You got to do all that again, but you'll have it from your initial exam.
But you cannot waive in until you've actually been sworn in to your first state.
Yeah.
So that's something to keep in mind. You guys were sworn in last year. I was sworn in yesterday. New York does not have you fill out your character and fitness materials and submit it until after you've taken the exam. And then you have to wait, you know, the processing time, find out if you've passed, which is not until November, and then you go in January, and that's the earliest time that you can be sworn in after taking the July bar, which is a long wait time to actually be able to practice and be able to waive into DC. So if you're concerned about being able to practice right away after you have graduated or being available to practice, if you're still looking for a job, one of the more local bars might be a better option. That's just...
Yeah. And then the DC rule is that, just so everybody knows, I don't know if it's super necessary for you to know, once you start practicing in DC, you have to, it's a Court of Appeals rule, you have to submit your application within 90 days of starting to practice in DC. If you're admitted, say, in Virginia, I have until January 31st to submit my DC bar application under the rules.
And then for the MPRE and bar exam results, if you don't waive within the first couple of years, do they go stale at all? I've heard something about the MPRE.
The MPREs, I don't think so, but there are, I wanted to say Virginia, I'd have to look this up, but I think there's one for which you need to take the bar within a certain window of either side of the MPRE. It's a certain period of time where you could still do it in your second year, and then take the Virginia, I think it's Virginia bar after you graduate. So for some of them, there's some window, but it can be jurisdiction specific. So it's a kind of thing. The National Conference of Bar Examiners, for those of you who are looking for information, ncbex.org. These are the folks who do the, you can do it in lower caps, but that's easier to see. National Conference of Bar Examiners, they're the ones who do the multi-state portions of the exams. So you can find a lot of information about, and through them, you can actually link to the jurisdiction and the specific court rules of the jurisdiction. So that's a good website, too.
And you can also get, like, the pass rates
for
all jurisdictions, and they'll actually break it down for you. Like, this was something that stressed me out, like, oh god, Virginia's overall pass rate is like 59% or something. But you go in there and you're like, oh, but for first time test takers from an accredited law school, it's in the high 70s. Like, okay, you know, so you can kind of see where you would fall in your respective jurisdiction and what the rates are there and everything.
Yeah, and New York appears like a lower pass rate, right? It sounds like a harder bar, but it's the only bar in the country that foreign attorneys can take without having gone to a U.S. law school. So there were multiple people sitting near me who did not have English as their first language and did not always understand oral instructions. I have a great deal of respect for them for even sitting for the bar like that. I cannot imagine taking a bar in Spanish or Chinese. Like, that's
ridiculous. So keep that in mind, that those people have that additional language hurdle that is, I think, bringing down the pass rate in New York, that should not impact how you feel about your own chances.
Yeah. In Virginia, you can do the law reader thing, so you don't even have to go to law school. So there'll be people taking the bar that didn't even go to law school, let alone an accredited law school. So take that into account when you look at the statistics, too.
Okay, I think we're actually just wanted to. Yes, sorry, one point. If you're taking Maryland, so on the state-specific portion, they generally have, you know, the main six topics, contracts, torts, every year, but they have different topics, different years. So, for example, this year they had commercial paper. They haven't had that for 5 or 6 years. But especially topics like commercial paper and Civ Pro, where you get an extract, because you get an extract with all the rules and everything. Make sure you don't gloss over studying that, because you might think, you know, I have everything here. When the exam comes, I'm just going to look at it. But it really takes a long time to even figure out what's going on, especially in commercial paper. It's barely in English. So you really want to have a couple run-throughs with that and know where to look for what, because you save a lot of time. So don't gloss over the things where, even where you get an extract, because those can be the hardest.
Yeah, that's one of the nice things about the prep classes. They give you sort of like a chart of how often certain subjects are tested. And, you know, you can't go by it 100%, but it is a really good indicator of where you should be focusing your time. And there will be things like Virginia has 26 subjects, but some of them are very rarely tested. But some of them that are frequently tested, you may not have taken in law school, like Virginia equity is on the Virginia law bar exam because Virginia just abolished the distinction between law and equity like 5 years ago. So that's something, unless you took remedies, it's going to be totally new, and it's like the fifth heavily tested subject. So pay attention to those charts that they give you and know where you should be focusing your time.
But again, don't gloss over anything just because, like I said, commercial paper was only tested this year and hasn't been tested for a long time, and I'm pretty sure I got a zero on it, maybe a one. So pay attention.
Please assist me with three things. First, join me in thanking the panelists for taking their time out today. If there's been at least one takeaway during the session, I hope there's been more than that. Please go to your classmates who aren't here and encourage them either to attend tomorrow morning, same bat time, same bat channel, 10 a.m. and from 4:02, or to find the podcast, which should be loaded early next week. And then the very last thing, if you do nothing else the rest of the weekend, take this away as the single best tool for ensuring that you're going to pass the bar. Repeat after me. I'm going to pass the bar.
I'm going to pass the bar.
I'm going to pass the bar.